All stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Well, good evening. This is American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. We are on episode 18. Man, we're steaming right along with all these, and we're going to continue to talk about community preparedness, but I would like to hit a little bit on the news, just some of my own input here and there, in case any of you, seem to care. So, Supreme Court lets challenge to Texas abortion law proceed. Allows law to remain in effect. Well, the Texas heartbeat law basically says, you know, after 6 weeks, you can't have an abortion. Now, being that I'm a Christian, I am against abortion. And I would think that most people would be against aborting the future of our country. Especially since, the people who defend abortion are the crazy leftist lunatics. I'm looking through here at some of these people who are pro-choice and anti-abortion demonstrators and some of the pro-abortion demonstrators. My God. It's like there's normal people on one side, and then the freak show showed up on the other. I don't know what it is. Look, if you are pro-abortion, I don't agree with you. I don't think anyone should agree with you. And if your mother was pro-abortion, you wouldn't be here. You know, there's not a good argument for the whole abortion thing. There are maybe very few instances where I would agree to hear out the reason for an abortion. However, that is not my decision to be made. I'm gonna leave it at that. You know, that's a very tricky conversation to have with people as a man. All I can tell you is that if you're gonna have an abortion as a woman, it better be for the utmost damnedest greatest reason ever, not just because it was a mistake. So, here we go. The BLM leader of New York keeps spouting about white privilege, keeps talking about, you know, violence in the streets. I don't understand why the BLM would stand in solidarity with Jesse Smollett, and he even said, "We can never believe the police." Yeah, because police just run around constantly making up stuff. Well, hold on, wait. Let's define that. The FBI does that, but your average day-by-day police officer does not do that. I find it very funny at this junction in our history where we have a nation who cries for police but also hates it when the police are used. Yeah, it's one of those things. Do you want it or do you not want it? If you don't want the police, then just let anarchy reign. Because that's what will happen. Anyways, I'm going to get off that soapbox. California BLM supporter accused of driving into crowd had her rights violated during the hearing, says the judge. So, isn't that nice? You can just take your vehicle and use it as a battering ram into a crowd of people and still have rights. We have a very confused nation, I think. I think when you look at some of the other third world nations, I think some third world nations honestly have better laws than what we do. And when I say better, I think what I really mean is more harsh laws that are very strict, where the sentencing is literally set out that day, and it's not very pretty, but there's not as much rampant crime either. Pick your poison. You know, for the conversation we're going to have, we're going to continue to talk about, I'm going to show you why all these things really do matter. Because when the tables are turned on us, and we, you know, are dealing with a post-apocalyptic America, will we still have a jury by your peers? Will you still have a Fourth Amendment? Will you still have the Second and First Amendment? You know, will we still be trying to defend the Constitution? Will you still have your Bill of Rights? It's one of those things that, you know, sometimes you don't talk about because, hey, it's post-apocalyptic. Everything can, you know, anything and everything can go. I think even during that time, it would behoove of us to continue to preserve our way of life, especially the way that law has been established in this country, even though it's the most frequently broken thing in this country, it would still be the best thing for us to do to continue to enforce law properly amongst ourselves to keep ourselves from trying to eat one another at one point. So, you know, we still have this problem with Russia and China. We still have, you know, the rampant growth of new COVID strains and the acceleration of crime in America. We're getting close to an economic collapse, and I know you've all heard me say this almost every single day. And it's probably boring to listen to, but it is still, you know, every day I wake up and I go, okay, what are still the threats to America? Nothing's changed. If anything, I just keep adding a few things, which is a very pessimistic way to live, but you know, you would think as this advanced society, we'd be able to start crossing a lot of the pros and cons off the list, but I keep getting more of the negatives. So I'm hoping that what I can give you is a little bit of positivity, a little bit of creativity for your community or for yourself, for your family, in a preparatory mindset. There are a few subjects we're going to go over today. And I just want you to know that, you know, in the realms of survival, people have done this for thousands and thousands of years. We're not talking about anything new. Humans are a very resilient creature. You know, we might not all make it, which is a tragedy. And we might not all like the new future once, you know, everything bad that every doomsday prepper has ever said happens. But I want you to consider that God's people will march on. This world does not stop until God says it stops. We are going to continue to endure. We're going to continue to have tribulations. I don't believe we're going to be sucked out from into the clouds when all the really bad stuff starts, but God's people are not going to be part of God's wrath. We are going to be here for Lucifer's reign and his wrath. So, you know, no one knows how close we are. I don't care how much of a biblical scholar you are. I have, you know, people that I am associated with who are actual theologians, and we have the most epic conversations about where we are right now. And it's very frustrating sometimes with people who, you know, they have a lot of head knowledge, but they don't have a lot of common sense. As Pastor Langford would say, Pastor Langford, by the way, the voice of evangelism, he is the source that I use to get my Jesus on. He's the man that I listen to. He's really touched my heart in a lot of ways and helped me convert to Christianity. So praise God for that. But please give him a listen to. That's The Voice of Evangelism. You can find it on a radio show on Global Star Radio, YouTube. He has his own website. So, you know, there's different places you can go to and you can check him out. Please check out Pastor Langford. But, you know, no matter what your biblical understanding is, no matter what your theological persuasion is, we can all agree that when all this really bad stuff that the book of Revelation, Matthew 24, and so on and so forth starts to talk about, I think we can all agree that when the beast system arises, when the new world order is fully established, when artificial intelligence is out of control, when we're, you know, going through World War III or a civil war, or we're having to deal with the Antichrist and his army, you know, we can probably all agree that you're not going to just be able to go down to Starbucks. Not unless you have the mark, right? We can probably all agree that the Internet of Things, is not going to be there at your leisure anymore, especially if we turn into anything like China. We can probably all agree that if we get delved back into the Dark Ages, where we don't have the use of technology like we do now, and I mean that by, I think we'll still have technology, I think we'll still have the Internet, I think it will be one of those things that is mainly accumulated at certain big cities across the world, where the power is at. The energy will be there. I think that's how it may be, because, you know, it makes the most sense, right? If we're talking about this epic destruction of mankind in our industrial way of life, then we will need to figure out how to go back to 18th, 19th century mechanical advantage machineries for pumping water, for using as a drill press, or, you know, a millstone for grinding grain to make bread, you know, or excuse me, flour. You know, all these little things that we take for advantage. When's the last time you used one of the egg beaters? Do y'all remember this? Are y'all as old as I am? Do you remember the egg beaters? Actually, you had to turn, had a little wheel and a handle, and you spun around in circles, and it would get stuck together, and you'd sit there and help your grandma or your mom, you know, make cookies, and you get to sit there and lick the batter off of it. And now it's all just electric, right? Well, save those items. You may need them. I don't throw away. If anything, I've gone back to using hand tools quite a bit. I just recently made my wife a new chicken house, a chicken coop, and I used entirely a Japanese handsaw, which I think is one of the greatest little saws. They're extremely light. They're very bendable. They have a unique curve to them whenever you need them, and they're fairly cheap. I like them a lot. I find them to be, you know, extremely, extremely easy to use. They're called pull saws, P-U-L-L, pull saws. You can get them in various different sizes. They have, you know, different hand saws that are straight edged on one side and the teeth on the other. And then you have some that have the larger teeth on one side and the smaller teeth for the other for, you know, fine work and large work. So, you know, buy you a couple of those, man, and throw those in a tool chest. I suggest, especially us bubbas out there, us rednecks, us men, have a toolbox that has the old school tools in it that your grandfather used, hand saws, right? The old school, you know, drills. Keep all that stuff and keep it off to the side. You never know. Let's just say DHS and their ever love for conspiracy theories. If one of their biggest worst case scenario conspiracy theories comes true, which is the EMP effect, and we effectively lose power for more than 2 or 3 months, you're going to need these tools. Because more than likely, you're going to run out of gasoline and diesel eventually for your vehicles and then for your generators. You'll have to decide, do I need it for my vehicles or do I need it for my generators? You know, and then once you run out of power, and then, you know, your refrigerator doesn't work anymore, your AC doesn't work anymore, people are not going to know what to do with themselves when all this valuable modern-day industrial technology is not there for you to keep life-sustaining needs. What are you going to do? When the energy goes away, a lot of people are going to die. I don't mean to say it so negatively, but that is just plain truth. Some people, especially a lot of the young adults nowadays, do not know how to live on their own. They don't know how to even bake. They don't know how to use an oven. Most of them just have they go down to the local store, or they order food, or they buy frozen food and they throw it in the microwave. Very few people really know how to even cook, let alone gather materials and cook outside. You don't even see that anymore. We still practice that here and there at my house. And I'll tell you one thing, we're going to start picking back up on that. I fully intend on making an outdoor kitchen area. Just because of my spot of Texas, we just so happen to have brownouts every now and then where it'll get too hot and one of these power lines will get snapped, or a tree will fall from too high of straight line winds. The freezing season between January and spring affects us quite a bit. We have a really good electric utility company out here, but still 2 or 3 days to a week without power sucks. Thank God we have, a propane-fueled oven. Thank God we have natural gas. Thank God we have a stove, a wood-burning stove inside the house. So we did take that preparation very seriously. You don't ever want to be without a heating source. But, we're gonna catch back up on this right after the break. I just want you to know that I'm going to give you a lot of stuff that me and my wife sat down and talked about of what we think people need within a community. And we're going to get really specific on some of this stuff. So, grab a pen and paper and write some of this down. There's pretty good information in it. And we will be back right after this break.
The time for political correctness is in the rearview mirror. The fact is, the American dollar is on the verge of collapse. It's been abused mightily by those in power. Massive debt, massive inflation have left Americans with few options. Most think they have no choice but to ride it out with their money in the bank. And sadly, they're going to awaken one day and all that money is going to be gone. Do you have an option? The answer is yes. Precious metals. But knowing to go into precious metals is not the same thing as knowing who to go into precious metals with. We have an answer for you. It's called Renaissance Precious Metals. It's owned and operated by the famed Steve Quayle, radio talk show host, world famous, and an expert in precious metals. Been doing the work for 34 years. So whether you're interested in gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, whatever your interest is, wherever you want to land in your escape pod, this is it. Renaissance Precious Metals can be reached at 406-586-4842. Call Steve Quayle at 406-586-4842. You can also visit them online at sqmetals.com. Ladies and gentlemen, don't wait. The collapse is underway. The time to act is now.
Okay, and we're back. So right now we're going to talk about community preparedness. This is just another continued version of this. Everything I'm telling you right now is educationally based. A lot of it is also things that I have a lot of pretty good experience with, and also things that I've drawn on from other people. Articles I've read, videos I've watched, things that I've actually been experienced with while, you know, working on community preparedness and survival preparedness and going through disaster areas in other countries. Haiti was a really big one that opened my eyes to just how much a community can be completely left out by their country if their country's not ready. So everything I'm giving you right now, like I said, it's my examples, it's my opinions. There's a lot of resources out there. I'm not the only guy who talks about this. I'm not an expert on this. I just know, based off of my experience, what I think works. Now, there's a lot of people out there that are very science involved and tech involved, and there's some engineers out there who will just blow your socks off with their idea of how to make a community work. And I strongly suggest you listen to those people and recruit them. If you live in a town that is small enough, or in a suburb that is connected enough with its residents, you should have an emergency council board that I would say the community is involved with, that is something that is set aside from the politics and is only formed around disaster recovery operations. That doesn't just have to be doomsday. It could be a tornado, hurricane, a devastating flood, a wildfire, this pandemic that we've all been dealing with. There are multiple applications for this. But what we're gearing for is the most extreme of extremes. So if you prepare for the most extreme, the lesser disasters should still be easily covered then, right? That makes sense, doesn't it? So yesterday, let's read back over these notes. We talked about security, securing the perimeter of your town or of your suburb or whatever it is that your community has. You need to have a proper external fence. I suggest something that is not see-through, something that has some element of ballistic protection, hopefully, maybe. If anything, it's something that is sturdy and that can withstand people hitting up against it. It's not just going to fall over. Also, if you're going to make a fence like that, just be mindful if you decide to do it all out of wood, that wood burns, okay? So just consider that. One thing that I strongly consistently tell people is that if you're going to have a fence, you need to have some sort of vehicle barriers around that fence. Now, with what I used to do while I was in the government is, constructing these ways for federal facilities and federal agencies to protect themselves against all different kinds of attacks. Well, one thing that we see that's very common, and unfortunately we see it today in America, are vehicle-borne attacks through vehicle-borne IEDs, which are improvised explosive devices, and also vehicle ramming attacks. So, if you think about it, people could easily run their car through a fence and now you have a gigantic hole, right? So what is a way to stop that? Well, placing large rocks around the fence that are at least 4 to, let's say, 5 to 6 feet apart from each other, something that will still, you know, hopefully cover a medium-sized, regular-sized car. It still hit it and slow it down enough so that the impact against the fence is not as great. Also, there are bollards, concrete bollards that you can actually, you know, have put into the ground. And if you're doing this on a budget, a bollard can also be something as simple as taking a 10 to 12 inch round post that you can generally buy from the feed store, and then concreting that at least 3 to 4 feet, 3 feet to 4 feet into the ground, and have them dispersed every 3 feet apart from each other. That will effectively slow down a car, at least make somebody think about it. And if you need to go a little bit further, well, you can tie it all together with chain or with, you know, probably an inch thick cabling, steel cable. You know, there are other applications out there, and one of these days on the website there'll be some additional info and some contact stuff in case people are interested. I can give you a little bit of a greater detail of what I would do. But planters are another thing. You can also make gigantic boxes. This is something we did constantly for agencies who did not have the ability to, you know, spend $20,000 to $30,000 digging up, you know, concrete and putting in concrete bollards or steel bollards. We tell them to put a planter box out there, something that is hundreds of pounds of dirt and rock. And typically the planter box itself was made out of concrete. So once again, if you are trying to prepare on a budget, don't make it out of 2x4s, make it out of 4x4s. Fill at least half of the bottom of it with heavy, dense material like rock, and then make the top of it something nice and pretty, right? So that is something that will also, due to its weight and the displacement of weight when a car hits it at, you know, certain miles per hour, depending on how heavy the car is, it should slow the vehicle down enough that it could hopefully deter or disable the attack, right? The point is we want to make the external part of your, let's just go ahead and call it compound, we want it to look intimidating. We want it to look like a fortress without it being a fortress, because, you know, there's a lot of things that go into that. If you can do the fortress thing, more power to you. Dig the moat and throw the alligators in there as well. But if you don't have that ability, what I want you to do is, if you live in one of those types of estates where you have a fence all the way around your golf resort, suburb that you live in, 10 to 20 feet in between that fence and wherever the wood line starts needs to be cleared. You need to keep that open so that you can always see anybody who is along that fence line. Also, you want to keep your fence line clear of trash cans, boxes, small trees, anything that people could climb from the external portion of the fence into the internal portion now of your compound. We don't want any type of debris that can give someone an advantage of defeating your fence very easily, depending if it's a tall fence or a short fence. And there are all different types of fences and all different types of suggestions I can give you for fences. Like I said, here pretty soon I'll have a lot of contact for that. So, fence is over. Let's talk about the gates real quick. Gates, you can have a rolling gate. Most of you know what that is, just a gate that slips back and forth on wheels. If you do have that, make sure, you know, you keep your gate clear of debris like rocks. That way, if you have to quickly slam it home and secure it, it's the wheels are not now obstructed by debris, especially from small rocks, because then now you got to get down on your hands and knees and pry all that out. And, you know, if there's a horde coming at you, that's a really crappy time to have to do that. There's also swing gates. You can have one gate that swings open, and that gate can either swing into the compound or it can swing open externally from the compound. Depending on the situation of where you're at, depends on if you need that done or not. I would tell you that probably either gate will work. You know, we're not talking about people taking a gigantic tree and cutting it into a point and putting that on wheels and trying to shove that through a gate anymore. What we're talking about is being able to secure your compound quickly from any type of a ambush or any type of a kinetic threat, or, you know, that roving band of heathens that are coming down the street to come and take all your stuff. We just want a very secured gate. That gate probably needs to be very well maintained. You don't want that gate to break down. So once again, your engineers, your carpenters, your bubbas, those guys need to make sure that that gate can hold up to the load that is put on that gate and not eventually sag down to where then that gate is really more of a hindrance than a viable option of opening your internal, external ports of entry. So that's gates. On the external portion, internally in your compound, we want lights that are above your fence that shine out at least 20 to 100 feet away from your compound, depending on how well your lights can throw lumens downrange and just how close the wood line is to you. If you have a close wood line, like I said, you need to take that wood line and cut it back. Here's a great thing. Cut down all the wood and keep it. Drag it into your compound and let it dry out. You can use it for lumber, and you can also use it for cooking and for heating up homes, right? So there's always a good use for wood. But you also want to clear your wood line because, you know, if you have a really close wood line to your compound, well, that's going to suck because people can sit right there and they can spy upon you. They can do reconnaissance on you. And they can also ambush you, you know, one shot at a time. And trust me, that sucks when you have the one single sniper and you can't find them. So, you know, having lights that are very bright, I would also suggest LED lights. And the ability to power those lights, and we're talking about emergency lighting, okay? We're not talking about the everyday light. Because if you power these types of lights every day, you're eventually not going to have the fuel to power them. If you're in a community and you really care about preparedness, I would suggest that you have the lights that have some sort of a built-on generator onto them so that if needs be, you can remotely go out there and power these lights, and they're, you know, they just need to be refueled. It's not something that you need to keep on constantly, and it's also, a lot of these lights come on a very small trailer, so you can reposition them. So, you know, keep that in mind. Lighting is a very big thing. Something that's, you know, something I tell a bunch of my friends all the time, they talk about, you know, home preparedness. One thing that bad guys hate is they hate light. Darkness always hates light. So one good way to deter bad people is to have so much light that they are easily seen, and hopefully that will deter their criminal or terroristic actions, right? But also really good light helps you to deny ambushes. If you have enough light and enough cleared space, and you have, you know, interlocking sectors of fire from your machine gun nests and all this cool stuff that you got, well, having the light to be able to see is going to also help denying that element of an ambush upon your compound. So just consider that. You want light to go out as far as you can effectively fire and readily identify, positively identify threats. Not just individuals, but threats. So we also talked about acquiring assets. So our scout team will go out and they'll normally have a foraging team who are supposed to go out and look for food. You can have a medical crew, which I would suggest you have like a, you know, a doctor or a former military medic, or, you know, the Navy corpsman, which was our attachments. You know, have someone that has medical experience, a nurse, you know, a pharmacist. That's another really good one. Someone who knows what they're looking for that type of pharmaceutical medicines and all different types of medical equipment that you need whenever you're going out on your scouting parties or, you know, raids, whatever you want to call them. Same people are going out looking for food. They're going out looking for clothing. They're, you know, shoes and boots, hardware materials. Probably send an engineer out there to look for any type of, you know, building construction stuff that you need. Be smart about it. Send the adults out there. Don't send the kids. You know, go out. If you have to send out a team, you're going to send out a security element with it. You're going to send out people who are, you know, they're navigating through well-defined areas that you've now made trade routes, or you've made you know, known routes. That person would be, you know, let's call him the guide. In the military, that's what he's called, as a guide. And when you come, when you leave the premises, when you leave the compound, you need to have some safe words. You need to have some security words. The military is pretty good about this, and, you know, even in law enforcement, we had this, depending on the operation, mainly because we were all veterans, so, you know, it was fun for us. You need to have code words that change every day that all the security operation people know about, and only they know about it. And when I say that, like, you know, the old World War II, thunder and clash, or, you know, lightning and strike. You want to be able to, if you need to, come back into your compound in a hurry, and there is a challenge word, which is what the military uses. You know, hey, if I say thunder and then they say clash, I know that's the same people and I should be letting them in. Hopefully, right? That's just one element of also making sure that the people who went out are the same people who are coming back in. All right, so food processing, once again, have a big enough place that you can store your dried goods, you can store your water, a place that has a very good ventilation system and effectively a cooling system, or a place that is very, very well maintained and cool. It doesn't have high humidity that's going to spoil any of the vegetables or fruits or meats that you've gained throughout this period. You need to separate raw meats from your dry foods areas, and also make sure that you have vermin control on par. We don't want rats and all the, you know, nasty, icky bugs getting into all your meat and all your produce. And we also want to make sure that if you have the ability for a generator, you want it there. Because if you can have that one generator concentrated on, you know, let's say a really nice big walk-in cooler that your community decided to make, that's where you want that emergency power at. That's where you want that emergency backup power at. And, you know, if you are worried about the EMP threats and all that, we're going to discuss all the lovely stuff about EMP threats, critical infrastructure down, you know, all that really cool stuff next week. Monday to Friday is going to be everything about EMPs that I know, everything about critical infrastructure, power down type of stuff. You know, we're going to go over a bunch of stuff, and I've already started this since 9 o'clock this morning on research and writing down a bunch of articles and stuff from, you know, the Nuclear EMP Commission and Dr. Peter Vincent Price. So like I said, we're going to go through an exhaustive amount of information next week, so I'll hold that for next week. Medical, once again, need to have a hospital. You need to have a triage area. You need to have an infectious unit. You need to have a grave digging details. You're probably still going to need to maintain the nursing homes, but I would suggest that the nursing homes be homes in somebody's home. I would suggest that, you know, you have a hospital and you have all the needs for that hospital, if possible, and you may need to be bartering with animals and with all the different types of stuff to resupply for these medical units that you'll be needing. Infrastructure is another one that we covered. You know, once again, your engineers, your smart kids, you know, that is going to be something that you don't really think about very much, but we want these people figuring out how to get life back to normal. If the power is down, not just because of an EMP, but because of a terrorist attack or a domestic terrorist attack where they're taking down the grid, they're taking down the infrastructure, just looting and rioting can also happen the same way. Or a cyber attack could happen just like that. Trust me, it's something that the government is very, very worried about because we don't have very many answers for it. Once again, that's going to be next week. We want these extremely intelligent people to be focused on only trying to make our lives easier. I want to know how to get the gas out of the ground. I want to know the proper way to store this gas. So I also need to know how to get the welding machines back up and running. I want to know how to get the power back up and running. I want to know how to get the water moving through the pipes again. I want to know how to get the water purification plant back up and running again. All these things are sanitary based, really, but they are what keeps the community alive. Having good, clean water, having the ability to have water, the ability to have power, pushed out to where we need it, not to the point that we have so much voltage going to one place that, you know, we're causing fires or, we're constantly throwing breakers that we don't have very many of, which is also one thing you need to be going out looking for on these scouting trips. You know, we want these engineers, we want them to have teams of people. I would have an engineer with a carpenter, with a plumber, with electricians. You know, we want all those guys off on their own, figuring out how to keep the town, the community up and running. And also constantly doing maintenance. I want them to be doing assessments on our grid, assessments on my gate, on my fence, on the lighting, inspecting the road. I want them to be doing their job like if it never stopped, but I want them to be extremely focused on it, because keeping and maintaining everything that we do for a normal day of life will mean a lot to people when they don't have very much from what they would say to live for anymore. When everything starts to be torn down, when everything stops working, people are going to lose hope and people are going to lose their minds, especially when they get really bored because the internet's not going to be there anymore. Or their games may not be there anymore to entertain their mind. So, you know, we want at least the lights to still be on. Maybe, hopefully, that'll calm the psychosis in people. We're going to go for a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, "You will own nothing, and you will love it." And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today, where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position. Really, for the first time in our history, we're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com, or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
Welcome back. This is American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. We are talking about community preparedness. And we are finally going to get to today's topics. What are the best animals for consumption for a community? Now, there are quite a bit of different selections of animals, but I'm going to give you what I think are the bomb-proof, the average thing that most farmers used in what the 1800s and 1700s and early 1900s. Most people still had these animals. At least the communities did. You know, the individuals can also own some of these animals, and I'm going to break that down for you. So what are the animals on my list? Poultry, that is quail, chicken, turkeys, pheasants, swine, so pigs, right? And here's a good thing about pigs. Everything that you don't eat, feed to your pigs. Pretty simple, right? Pigs are also really good for whenever you need to clear out an area of woods and you don't want to burn the calories. Set up a hasty fence within about an acre of an area if you need to expand property. And the pigs, within about a month or two, will take down every bit of vegetation except for large trees within that 1 acre. They're little miracle machines. And I'm a big fan of pork chops and bacon, so you know I'm all about pigs. Waterfowl, ducks, and geese. I have a hate-love relationship with geese. Geese are a big, thick, fat bird that tastes great. They're a very hardy bird. They hardly ever get sick, unlike chicken and some of the other smaller poultry. Waterfowl, you know, I mean, the ducks and the geese, man, I've seen them, you know, deal with or be surrounded by infectious birds and not catch anything. And if they do, they just shrug it off. They don't care if it's raining. They don't care if it's muddy. They don't get sick because of it. The wind and the water, the rain, you know, the cold, it doesn't really bother them that much. They literally just need a doghouse to get into with some straw on the bottom. And that's it. You know, they need a source of water to keep themselves clean and hydrate their skin. Other than that, that's really all they need. Ducks and geese, if you're feeding them well and you are free-ranging them in a good, clean environment, will produce very large eggs. A goose's egg is, depending on the chicken, 2 to 3 times the size of a chicken egg. Now, if you had a bunch of geese, that's a lot of large eggs. One egg, depending on your caloric intake and protein need, one egg... you're probably getting close to about 12 to 16 grams of protein. You know, a lot of really good fats that's in that egg, a lot of good cholesterol that's in that egg. So, you know, that's a very, very big pro to them. And, you know, once again, as soon as they run by, if you need to harvest one, you grab them by their little neck and off you go. Now, on the other hand, here's the cons of it. They're very loud. Sometimes they bite. Sometimes they like to chase your small children. They're quite funny, but they're very loud. Very messy. Messy birds. If you do have geese or any type of waterfowl, to include ducks, keep them away from your chickens. They'll bully them around. We've had them kill our chickens before. They'll bully them around. They'll eat all the feed. They crap everywhere. You could have a small cup of water and that goose will try to fit its body in it. They foul up the water. They'll foul up the water for your larger livestock as well. So keep them in a secured paddock somewhere, which is how we break everything down into paddocks of what type of bird is where. But other than that, man, they are great for when prophecy hits the fan. That is a bomb-proof bird. Those geese will just keep on rocking. Yeah, they're loud and they're mean. They crap everywhere and they mess up the water. But other than that, it's a big, meaty bird. You can still reuse the feathers if you need to, ad hoc make new pillows. I am a big fan of geese. I hate them at the same time. Ducks, on the other hand, I don't have a big use for ducks. Duck eggs are kind of meh to me. Ducks are really pretty, and that's about the only reason why me and my wife like them. Other than that, they're a very hardy bird. They're just like geese. They foul up everything. They're not very loud. I do like to hear my ducks walking around and quacking. I think they're very funny. But other than that, they will withstand the weather that kills chickens. Chickens are susceptible to rain, to wind, to the cold, to the heat. They are a very dirty bird, and they carry E. coli through their droppings. But you can also easily harvest them, depending on if you're getting broilers or, a lot of these really big meaty birds like what we have. It's food that's right there for you. Some of the birds that we get, they'll lay between 200 and 300 eggs a year for 2 to 3 years, some 3 to 4 years. And what that is not only is that food, but that's the ability to also incubate those eggs and recreate your food, or, let a chicken go broody and, hatch out her own eggs. But you can also trade. So that is a barter system. You can barter with other, survival groups or communities that are out there, or within your own community if you have, your own chickens. You can then barter with your neighbors for items that you're missing as well. No one is going to deny a fried egg whenever you're hunting for lizards to eat, or when you're down to eating dog food. Which, by the way, all dog food is human grade. That's a little wealth of knowledge for you. Next. Goats and sheep. Hey man, what else can you say? Goats make really good chili. Goats are very annoying. Bucklings are cute and the doelings are cute. But man, whenever some of these bucks start to get a little bit too big in their britches and they like to charge at you and they smell god awful. That's the name of the game unless you castrate them. But, that is food on the hoof. They're an extremely resilient animal. Goats are a unique animal because you can use goats as pack animals, and they actually work probably the best out of anything for pack animals. So if you're in the environment where you're up in the mountains and you need to go hunting and you have, your hunting group, your scouting party, and you don't have the elements to carry back equipment or game that you've taken. Well, you can use goats. You can easily train goats as well. I found that they're very easily to be trained. And, what's funny about them is that goats get about 90% of their water from the food that they eat. So they need very little water while you're out traveling. It doesn't mean that, they can't go without water. But when they do drink water, they retain it very well, and they get most of their water from the vegetation that they eat. Their body really helps to consume that and process that for their own water. So that's great to have an animal that's honestly packing its own water. One goat will easily hold 50 pounds. They're very quiet. They are the most agile animals out there that you can domesticate and still use as a pack animal. Donkeys and mules are extremely loud. They will carry more weight. Horses will carry more weight. But these animals are skittish, they're large, and can be very dangerous. They also can't go everywhere or be as easily controlled as a goat can. And goats are one of those animals where you don't need to have reins on them at all times. They will just follow the leader. So if you get used to, you know, herding your goats and, you know, traveling with your goats, they will just follow you. And they're a pretty loyal animal when it comes to that, too. You know, my goats would sit up in my lap like they were dogs. So they're funny little animals, and I love the goats. And, you know, worst case scenario, you can also eat them. They make for good food. So goats, sheep, especially with the sheep, if you get long-haired sheep, you can always convert that wool into yarn, and then from there process that into new clothing if need be, especially if you're in a more heavily winter environment. Sheep are probably better for you. Goats are good for anywhere in America. Sheep are pretty much good for anywhere in America. Here in Texas, in the really humid and hot environments, I would say just stick with goats. I would say stay away from your dwarf goats. They're really just a nuisance more than anything else. The Nubians, the Nigerians, they're really a nuisance. Stick with your bigger goats. Stick with dairy goats as well. There's so much good colostrum and good protein that comes from a dairy goat. You can, you know, milk that goat and immediately give it to an infant, and the infant will be able to instantly process that milk without having any type of intestinal problems, or digestible problems either. So that's a very unique thing. That's a great creature to have. Next we have rabbits. Rabbits breed like rabbits. I don't know what else to tell you. They're too easy to catch, too easy to kill. You can always reuse their hide, and they taste great. And rabbits reproduce quicker than any other animal that we have. Cattle are your biggest. They're going to have your most meat, but they're also going to be the most maintenance, the harder to take care of, and they're going to need a lot of pasture. Fish ponds. If you happen to live out there in that really nice, cool golf resort, turn your ponds into fish ponds. It would not hurt. Stock it with catfish. The way I grew up with on our ponds, man, we would just walk out there and feed our catfish the cheapest dog food that you can. And eventually you would just walk up to the edge of the water and the catfish would almost come right out at you. And you could just hit them with a gaff, a stick with pointy ends on it, and pull them right out of the water. There almost wasn't even a need for fishing. So consider that. Have your scout teams while they're out picking up stuff like pine cones, picking up stuff like medicinal plants and flowers and herbs. Make sure they have books that they can identify what they're looking at. Edible mushrooms is another one. Two books for that one is The Complete Mushroom Hunter and Mushrooming with Confidence. And mushrooms are one of those really great things that have a lot of vitamin D in them, a lot of really good vitamins. If you're going for some of the very, very big mushrooms, you can actually take those and supplant them somewhere else and create your own, you know, mushroom-like garden. So that is pretty much it for right now. We're going to get really into the weeds on EMP stuff Monday, and I have a few things my wife wrote down for me for community preparedness on chickens and using essential oils and stuff. So tune in Monday for all that. My name's Doug Thornton. This is American Vindicta. Out. stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.